This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The number of confirmed swine flu cases in the U.S. has topped 100, and a few schools in New York, Texas, and California are temporarily closed. People with flu-like symptoms are rushing to the doctor's office or the emergency room, or at least so we're told. Well, if you work in an ER, a clinic, in a doctor's office, call and tell us what you see. Our phone number, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org, and you can join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Joining us now from Texas Children's Hospital in Houston is Dr. Jeffrey Stark. He's Director of Infection Control, Chairman of the Infection Control Committee at the hospital. And Dr. Stark, it's nice to have you with us today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
And what's it like in your ER?
Busy. Very, very, very busy.
Are people scared?
People are scared. And, you know, we happen to have the child who was the first recorded death in the United States, but we also now have children in the community who've had confirmed swine flu as well. So it's here. And so we're learning how to deal with it really kind of on the fly.
But I presume that most of the people coming into your emergency room who think they might have it don't.
That's exactly right. We have a wonderful virology lab here, so we know what we're seeing, and we're seeing many, many, many other viruses in the community now. And so we are seeing a lot of different things and differentiating the probable swine flu cases from the other normal kids' illnesses we see is in fact very difficult.
And what happens when you find out one of your patients has swine flu?
Well, you know, it's interesting because one of the basic principles of swine flu mitigation in the community is social distancing. But schools can close, but hospitals can't. And so we have to figure out how to deal with this without being able to do many of the measures that other things can. And one of the most important things we can do is protect our environment, protect the patients, and protect our staff and physicians to do everything possible to make sure we're not transmitting the infection inside of the hospital. In fact, we have fully invoked our pandemic influenza plan, have a command center, and the place is a beehive to protect the environment.
As you said, you're seeing an awful lot of other kinds of viruses, and I assume other illnesses too. The people who come in, we forget 30,000 plus people die every year of regular, ordinary, run-of-the-mill flu.
Absolutely. And as an infectious disease person, for years we've said we've had a difficult time controlling something that we know is going to happen every year and is fairly predictable. This is something that's completely unpredictable with no vaccine. And so it's just we're trying to predict the future to know where it's going to go next. I tell the residents and medical students I work with, you are watching medical history being made.
Do you have sufficient supplies of Tamiflu and the other kinds of drugs that can mitigate the effects of this?
We do. And Texas Children's Hospital fortunately had a superb plan and is a wonderful organization at putting together plans for disasters. We have experience, unfortunately, with hurricanes and other things. I think the biggest bottleneck, to be honest, is going to be if we have many, many cases, is figuring out how to distribute the national stockpile through state and local health departments. And it just takes some time to get those systems together. But they will come together.
Are you telling people not to panic?
Oh, absolutely not panic. The number of cases is very, very low. We know what we're looking for. We know what to do. And we give doctor's offices and others guidance as to what to do. And again, the vast majority of ill children in Houston, Texas do not have swine flu.
Dr. Stark, thanks very much. We appreciate your time.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Dr. Jeffrey Stark joined us from Texas Children's Hospital in Houston, where he's Director of Infection Control and Chairman of the Infection Control Committee. With us now from Huntsville Hospital in Alabama is Dr. Thomas Calvert, co-director of the hospital's emergency department. And Dr. Calvert, nice to have you on the program today.
Oh, thanks for having us.
And you're a little further away from the border. How are things going today in Huntsville Hospital?
Oh, Huntsville, today the day's nice. It's 82 degrees, warm, slight breeze. And we are starting to become the recipient of a concern by the community about influenza. And we're having our share of positive influenza strain tests coming about.
So you're seeing some positive results?
Oh, yes, sir. We certainly are. We picked up about 10 last night, and we expect to see a lot more.
And I assume, like Dr. Stark, who we just talked to in Houston, you're seeing an awful lot of more ordinary viruses, too.
Oh, we are. There's a concern about the community as to whether they do or they do not have this kind of virus. And so we're getting folks coming in quite a lot with a variety of different complaints.
And a lot of people, I assume, bringing in their children.
Oh, they are. You can tell an adult not to come in, but when you try to tell a parent not to bring their child, that's a different story.
And do they come in? Do you do triage? Do you have somebody out there talking to them before they bring them back?
Yeah, actually, we have two hospitals on our campus here. One's a dedicated women and children's hospital. The other one's in a dedicated adult hospital. The pediatric hospital sees about 35,000 pediatric patients a year, and the adult sees about 85,000 patients a year. So we have a total of over 100 beds dedicated for emergency department services.
That's pretty large.
It is. Actually, to the best of my knowledge, we're the largest in the state.
By the way, we want to hear from you if you're on the front lines of the swine flu scare as well, if you work in an ER, if you work in a doctor's office, if you work in a clinic, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. Call and tell us what you're seeing. We know you're busy, but we want to hear from you. And Dr. Calvert, as you look at these people coming in, what can you tell them?
The majority of folks that come in are coming in with fairly mild to moderate symptoms, mostly aches and pains and low-grade fever and a runny nose. And our biggest concern is to make sure that they understand that the illness that they have, by all accounts, is something that can be easily treated and safely handled at home.
Safely handled at home. And if somebody's fever goes up over 102, 103, that's a little hard to persuade them.
Oh, it is. And we understand that. And that's why we have our open door policy here. And we will certainly take care of those at any time, day or night.
Are people asking for masks?
Well, they're being given masks. The moment they come into the door of the emergency department, they're being given a mask. And the community has been extremely cooperative, and there's been absolutely no complaints about it.
That same concern that we heard from Dr. Stark about somehow the fear that you could find this this infection in the hospital and start spreading it inside the building.
Oh, yes, sir. And he had a great definition, great description of that. And we are very much in the same mode of thinking as they are.
And as you're looking ahead, the cases are beginning to come in. Are you expecting that it's going to be a very tough weekend?
Oh, I expect the cases to significantly increase over the next several weeks. We start off with one or two, then we went to 15, and I just don't see it slowing down for several weeks or maybe even a month or two.
So those figures that we're seeing of confirmed cases from the CDC, of course, they are by nature very cautious. You think that's they're lagging behind the actual results?
I think though part of the issue with the CDC is that they're wanting to report confirmed cases. The diagnosis of the diagnosis of swine flu for places such as ours requires that once somebody has a positive test for influenza A, that a second sample is sent to a state lab. We do not, although we're a big hospital and we're a good hospital, we do not have the PCR capabilities that the state lab has. So our cases have to be sent to the state lab, and then the state has to evaluate them, test them, and get back with us. So there's a lag there. But we're seeing a significant sudden increase in the influenza A cases, and we're making the assumption that it's probably going to be in the direction of the non-typable or the swine flu illness.
Dr. Calvert, good luck.
Oh, thanks a lot. We appreciate it. And we're lucky that this community, the health department, is the single voice. So we have one person speaking for us. So we're very fortunate that way.
Dr. Thomas Calvert joined us from Huntsville Hospital in Alabama, where he's co-director of the hospital's emergency department. And let's get some callers in on the line. Robert joins us now. Robert calling from Charleston in South Carolina.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I'm an emergency physician in Charleston, South Carolina, at a relatively small community hospital, Somerville Medical Center. I'm actually in the car on my way to a shift now, going to be coming in about an hour early because I had a shift yesterday, which was one of the busiest that I've experienced in a long, long time, mostly because people coming in concerned mostly about their children having a fever, a cough, and worried, obviously, about the swine flu. And we haven't seen any cases here in Charleston. Matter of fact, I haven't seen an actual influenza case for a number of weeks, although we are testing for it. But it's a concern because we're seeing an incredible overload of amount of patients that we can handle without seeing actual disease in the swine flu or even influenza.
And
it concerns me about emergency in general because of the volume that we see on a daily basis and the concern that we might have if we do actually see swine flu in any proportions in the next several weeks.
It's going to be very difficult, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And, you know, concern obviously is for staff. If they get ill, what's the backup? It very well could become a tremendous crisis, although, so far, fortunately, we haven't seen much disease. And hope we don't.
Are there any set, can you say, look, if you don't have a fever over 104, you don't have swine flu?
There is. A lot of people are very reassured just by having, nurses and physicians look at them, talk to them, take some vital signs and say, think you're doing fine, follow up with your primary care in a day or two or return if you're doing worse. But people are waiting 4, 5, 6 hours just to even get back to the emergency room, sitting in stretchers in the hallway, which, alone is concerning because the waiting room is full. So now people that are potentially sick are sitting around with other people who aren't potentially sick and coming to an environment which is overcrowded at the best of times. So, we're making do. People are working extremely hard, but it's a system which is taxed to its maximum at the best of times, and now, without even seeing influenza or swine flu so far, we're being pushed even further.
Robert, we wish you the best of luck on your shift.
Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye. Here's an email we have, anonymously, I guess, asking me to point out that the World Health Organization would like us to stop using the name swine flu to prevent the panic slaughter of pigs. H1N1 is preferred. It has been designated H1N1. There is no reason to slaughter pigs. We call it swine flu because that's what people call it. That's how they know the name. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Bruce is with us. Bruce calling from Livermore in California.
Hi there.
Hi, Bruce. Go ahead, please.
Okay. I'm a pediatrician. I have practices in both Livermore and Pleasanton, California, which is about 40 miles east of San Francisco. And our office was inundated on Monday morning with telephone calls. We couldn't handle them all. Very worried people. Our office has continued to have that problem. We've been working overtime and calling even up to 9 o'clock at night trying to help calm the people's nerves. Large portion of the difficulty is the way the media has handled this, and it's really been frightening that people come in with the newspaper saying we have to do something. We want the Relenza, we want the Tamiflu, and so it takes time to explain to them that the treatment of these two medications only makes the illness milder if you have it. Just like with any flu, it does not cure swine flu. And the other problem is testing at a facility. They think they can walk into our offices and say, I want to be tested for swine flu. And that's really difficult to do in a private office because you have to have it handled in certain media. And it has to be kept cool and it has to be sent into the county. Another problem we've been seeing, too, is, again, through the media where the WHO director, who's a general, Margaret Chan, in the headline in our newspaper, it really is all of humanity that is under threat during a pandemic. Well, they put it up to a level 5, and it sounds to people like this is really, really bad, and none of the newspapers have really said what a level 5 means, which is basically the number of countries it's been in. It doesn't mean, like DEFCON 5, we're going to come at this point and protect the whole country, et cetera. It's a miscommunication.
Well, it sounds like it's going to be a busy time for you in the next few weeks, no matter what happens.
Oh, it absolutely definitely will be. but also for the local emergency facilities and the labs. All the labs that are out there can't do this test either. It has to be sent into quite a few labs. You find out 3 days later whether it's swine flu or not, and by that time, even if you were going to get the
Tamiflu or whatever, it's probably too late. Yeah. Bruce, thanks very much, and good luck to you. Well, Bruce, we're sorry to cut him off, but tomorrow, join Ira Flatow on Science Friday for an exploration of the most perfectly preserved baby mammoth ever found, plus a look at CSI for animals and how to investigate crimes against other species. Today we say farewell to one of those colleagues whose voice you don't know. You hear his name from time to time, Richard L. Harris. Why the L, you wonder? And the title, Director of Afternoon Programming, which you probably figure means an empty suit. Well, when he first came to NPR from Iowa in the mid-70s, he was just Rich Harris, a production assistant on All Things Considered. If we'd known he was really from Boston and a Red Sox fan, well, what's the statute of limitations on hiring discrimination? This was a much smaller company in those days, and we missed Rich dearly when he left to make a career in television, first at NBC News, then for many years with Ted Koppel on Nightline at ABC. He returned to radio a few years ago to a considerably bigger NPR, so big that we had a well-known science correspondent who'd already taken that Richard Harris moniker, which meant that our new boss had to use the middle initial on email and on those weekly production credit announcements to avoid confusion. And yes, the quick translation of Director of Afternoon Programming is boss of Tell Me More, Talk of the Nation, and All Things Considered. All three of those programs recently recorded the largest audiences in their history, and that's no coincidence. Rich leaves all three better than he found them. He leaves us again tomorrow. We wish him, if not his Red Sox, well, and again, we will miss him dearly. Hal Trosky, John Antonelli, Ferris Fane, Frankie Crosetti, Johnny Sane, Harry Brookin and Lou Boudreau, Frankie Gustine and Claude Passot.